Listen.
You're watching NRA TV with Cam Edwards.
I believe this legislation will further protect the Second Amendment rights of the citizens of South Dakota and this country. I will be signing this bill today and am proud that it is the very first bill that I will be signing as governor.
Good Thursday to you. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and to bear arms shall not be infringed. That is South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, who, as she mentioned, her very first piece of legislation that she is signing into law, constitutional carry in the state of South Dakota. How about that? I want to get into this because this is a great day for gun owners, not only in South Dakota, but really all across the nation. It is the continuance of a right to carry revolution that the NRA began decades ago and continues today. And this is a fight that is taking place in state capitals, like we saw in South Dakota. It is taking place in courthouses, like the Supreme Court, which will be hearing its first Second Amendment case since 2010, coming up this fall. And this fight is all around us. And it's in every state, by the way, because it's not like anti-gun activists are okay with constitutional carry being in South Dakota as long as they don't have to abide by it in New York. They don't want it anywhere because they don't want your right to keep and bear arms to exist anywhere. So here are some of the reactions in South Dakota to the signing of this constitutional carry bill today.
We'll make the right decision, and I think that she has South Dakota gun culture people in mind as she makes these decisions, and we'll see her way through to approving it. Wyoming has had it now for years and with no repercussions whatsoever, and it's just a step forward in the right direction.
Thought that guy was Chris Lash for a second, but no, he just has a doppelganger running around South Dakota. Who knew? Anyway, this is good news. The law goes into effect July the 1st in South Dakota, and here's where it gets really interesting. South Dakota becomes the 14th state in the union to become a constitutional carry state. No permit is required for you to exercise your right to carry. As long as you can legally own that gun, you can legally carry it. There are now only 8 states left that are what we call may issue, where you have to demonstrate good cause, self-defense not being a good cause to exercise your right to carry. There has to be some sort of specific ongoing threat against your life. And maybe even if you can demonstrate that that is the case, you can still be denied your right to carry for any reason or no reason whatsoever. Only 8 of those states left. 14 states. Now, constitutional carry. The right to carry revolution, which again I said has been going on since the 1980s, has been moving in one direction and one direction only. Not one state has gone backwards. Not one state has adopted constitutional carry and said, whoa, this is horrible. Let's go back to shall issue. Not one state that has adopted shall issue, where, all right, you meet the statutory requirements, you get your license, there's no playing around here, there's no funny business, there's no denying you because we don't like where you live or we don't like how you vote. Maybe we just don't like your look. If you meet the statutory requirements, you get to exercise your right to carry. No state's ever gone backwards from that to may issue. This fight, this progress, which is exactly what we're talking about here, this progress has been slow but steady in one direction. And again, whether it is through state legislatures, whether it is through court cases, ultimately it is through the work of NRA members like yourself that these victories are possible. So regardless of whether or not you live in South Dakota, thank you and congratulations on a big, big legislative victory today. Now, we've also been talking about some legislative losses already. You know, New York State, package of gun control bills passed by the legislature, going to be signed by Governor Andrew Cuomo. But one of the things we've been talking about with these new laws going into effect is just how hard it is to enforce these laws and the lack of compliance with many of these laws. In New York State, for example, today's the 31st. We've got a deadline today in New York State. And this has already been pushed back a year because it was a year ago that every legal gun owner in New York State was required to turn their firearms or get their firearms re-registered with their county authorities. And as of the original deadline, about 15% maybe of New York gun owners had done that. So in an effort to save face, Governor Cuomo and the state police, well, okay, you know, we're not going to go out and confiscate anybody's guns. We're going to give people a year-long grace period. Grace period's over, supposedly. This is no longer a news story. Governor Cuomo doesn't want to talk about it. State police don't want to talk about it. And governors apparently don't want to comply. So I guess this is just another part of the SAFE Act that kind of fades away into non-existence. We're seeing a lot of that. And again, if this was really about public safety, you'd think these politicians would be screaming and hollering. Governor Cuomo is so eager to put gun control laws on the books. Wouldn't he be strictly enforcing this law that he actually got on the books? But it's not about public safety. It's about public relations. And Governor Cuomo would rather send out a press release saying, oh, look at the new laws we put on the books, rather than actually go out and, you know, enforce this law strictly. And then all of a sudden you have people who are currently legal gun owners having their firearms taken from them. He doesn't want to do that. In 2019, we've got the disarmament primary coming up in 2020. You got to hold off on that. Got to hold off on enforcing those laws that he wants to put on the books. So up in Canada, in Quebec, there's another deadline that's passed, another registration deadline. The federal registry in Canada got scrapped by the Conservative government, but Quebec wanted to bring it back at the state level. And so they passed a law, and you got to register your guns. And here you go. 75% of the long guns that are supposed to be registered in Quebec haven't been registered in Quebec. The Montreal Gazette noted that opposition is growing in small towns where residents say the registry is pointless and the money would be better spent on mental health care. How dare they? How dare these gun owners suggest that this is pointless and the money would be better spent on actually addressing the problems rather than trying to keep track of where the guns are legally owned. Now, our friend Tony Bernardo from the Canadian Institute for Legislative Action, he joins us on the program right now. Tony, welcome. How are you, sir?
I'm well, Kim. How are you?
I am good. So we're just talking about, you know, again, the problems that gun control advocates are having with compliance with some of these laws here in the United States. New Jersey's magazine ban. Nobody turned their magazines in. New York. So here we have this deadline in Quebec, and of the people who are... Do we really know that it's 75%? Could it be 80? Could it be 85%? How do we even know what the number of gun owners are right now in Montreal, given that there was no long gun registry for a while?
Well,
We have no idea.
We can tell you the number of legal gun owners because we can tell you the number of licenses that are issued. But the only estimate they've got of long guns is the one based on the information that they had from 4 or 5 years ago when they abolished the former long gun registry that was federal. So they're estimating that there's about 1.6 million long guns in Quebec. The fact of the matter is there's probably been another 600,000 to 700,000 imported into Quebec since then, but they don't know that. They're strictly guessing. The bottom line here is of the 25% they do have, at least 15% of that is dealer inventory, like 15% of the 25. So you're looking at 10% of the gun owners in Quebec have actually registered their long guns. It's pitiful. It's just an absolute failure for the gun grabbers.
Well, you got a lot of residents that are registering their opposition. The Montreal Gazette notes that at least 50 municipalities have adopted resolutions against the registry. Philip Trudeau, mayor of Warden, which is a town of 400, about 100 kilometers east of Montreal, said the registry is pointless, will end up like its federal counterpart, which was abolished in 2012. He said the register may be popular in Montreal and Quebec City, but the majority of people in Warden are against it. He said of the tens of million dollars the government will spend on the registry, it would be better spent improving the quality of mental health care available in the province. Now, you know, again, the response, I guess, from the government would be, look, we decided to go in a different direction, and you better now register your firearms. But it sure sounds like, I mean, listen, I think there's a lot to be said for what Philip Trudeau, the mayor of Warden, had to say here. I think that, in fact, I think that attitude is very present across much of the United States as well. Like, look, you know, this might sound good to you in San Francisco or New York or Washington, D.C. or Chicago, but here in the, you know, in the rest of the country where we actually own firearms, we use them responsibly, we're legal law-abiding gun owners, you want a, you know, better society, you want to deal with some of the problems that we've got going, deal with the actual problems. Don't try to pin it all on us.
Yeah, and you know, over the course of time, registries have proven to be absolutely useless. And Canada's a great example. We dropped $2 billion taxpayer dollars on a long gun registry that cannot take credit for one single solved crime. Not one. We don't know if it's ever prevented any, because, of course, we don't keep records on prevented crimes like anyone else. But they can't find a single example of a crime solved by our $2 billion gun registry, so the feds turfed it. And they have no intention of bringing it back. Even the liberals have said they have no intention of bringing it back. It was a completely failed program. So along comes Quebec, and they decide they're going to do like gun registry light, where the penalty is a fine. And right now they're saying they're not going to enforce the fine because they would rather encourage and inform than give out fines. I mean,
yeah, we heard that in New York State a year ago too.
Yeah.
This is about public relations. It's not about public safety. They don't care if it works. They really don't. They would love for the compliance rate to be 100% so they could send out that press release. But really what they wanted was that press release that said, we're doing something. That's what this was about. It's not about whether or not it works. It's not about whether or not it violates the rights of Canadians or Americans or the human right of self-defense. None of that matters. It's about getting a PR victory for them.
And I'm not sure like throwing out a basket full of stupid is a PR victory. They've only succeeded in demonstrating how absolutely out of touch they are with public safety.
Tony Bernardo with the Canadian Institute for Legislative Action. Thank you, as always, sir, for coming to the program. It's good talking with you today.
Always a pleasure, Cam. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. We'll be talking with Tony again soon because they still got that possible ban on handguns and semi-automatic long guns floating around Canada. In fact, I believe it's the public safety ministry was supposed to be presenting the results of a listening tour to Prime Minister Justin Trudeau here in the new year, and we're already now to February, so that could be coming up in the next couple of weeks. Now, speaking of not complying with laws, Washington State, we talked about this a couple of days ago, a number of sheriffs there who say they're not going to be enforcing Initiative 1639, the sweeping gun control package that was approved by voters back in November, certainly not while litigation challenging the constitutionality of this law is underway, and it is, thanks to the NRA in Washington State and gun owners there as well. Now, Yakima Sheriff Bob Udell, becoming the latest sheriff to say, yeah, well, this lawsuit's going on. I'm not going to enforce this. In fact, not only that, sounds like the sheriff is not on board with the ideas contained within this referendum. He says, I just do not believe that it falls within the Constitution, not the state or the federal constitutions. He says, I don't like it. It's not aimed at who's committing crimes. And again, that matters to us. Right? Because for many of us, the reason why we are gun owners is because we don't want to be the victim of a crime. Or maybe we were the victim of a crime and we vowed we didn't want to ever be the victim of a crime again. That's not my story, but I know plenty of gun owners who have that story. So crime matters to gun owners. Low crime matters to gun owners. Less crime matters to gun owners. But again, I really, truly believe that for a lot of these politicians, this is not about public safety. If it benefits public safety, great, that's fine. But that's not the primary motivation. Whether it works or not is not the primary driver for pushing these laws. Not these particular laws. Now, the ultimate goal of pushing a disarmament policy, saying, you know, the Second Amendment is old and outdated, needs to go away, like we've seen the front page of the New York Times run. Yeah, they might be working towards that. But think about some of the laws that they're pushing right now. Talking about the universal background check bills in the books. Their own studies say they don't work. But for some reason, they're still the number one legislative priority. Because again, public relations victories. That's what's the real priority right now for the disarmament candidates and the disarmament activists. Now, our priority, again, protecting our right to keep and bear arms. And why do we do that? Because it is a right that is worth protecting. How do we do that? By being active, by being involved in the NRA, by being engaged citizens, and by passing these traditions and these responsibilities and this knowledge on to the next generation, right? So Carrie Hart, who is the husband of the singer Pink, has become the target of the perpetually outraged and perhaps the professionally outraged as well after posting a video of his 7-year-old daughter at the range. He said, I haven't poked the parent police bear in a few days. Wills and I are shooting the .22 rifle. She's getting pretty good. Can hit a 12-inch pie plate from 30 yards. Started her shooting at 3 years old. For the record, none of us hunt. just enjoy shooting for sport. I'm raising the kids with knowledge of firearms, how to handle them, shoot them, store them, and avoid them in uneducated hands. Hashtag knowledge is power. And in that one Instagram post, Carrie Hart did more for real gun safety, right, than every town for gun safety has done in its entire existence. Because that is what real gun safety is all about. It is about education. It is about training. These gun control groups that call themselves gun safety groups, their idea of gun safety is don't own a gun. That's it. That's gun safety to them. That's not gun safety to you. It's not gun safety to me. And it's not gun safety to the tens of millions of Americans who are currently legal gun owners and the millions more who would like to be one day. Perhaps when they live in a jurisdiction that actually acknowledges their right to keep and bear arms. So, Carrie Hart, one dad to another, good on you. Knowledge is power. I imagine this weekend, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, we're going to see a lot of families around. I don't know if Carrie Hart's going to be there with his daughter, but you're going to see a lot of dads and daughters and moms and sons and entire families because the Great American Outdoor Show is kicking off this weekend. This, by the way, I decided to use this as an excuse to go casual Thursday because this is the unofficial uniform if you are attending the Great American Outdoor Show in Harrisburg, PA. Ball cap and a hoodie, and you're going to be just, it's fantastic. At the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex, it is the entirety of the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex. This show is huge. And a lot of the folks who are there, particularly in the shooting sports hall, they're going to be coming straight from the shooting, hunting, outdoor trade show in Las Vegas. So last week, that was the industry show. That was where gun store owners, where manufacturers, where distributors get together. They make sales, new product is unveiled. This is the first actual show that's open to the public since SHOT Show. And so this is going to be your first opportunity to, among other things, get to see some of the new firearms that are going to be coming out to the public here in the coming months. But that, again, is just a small portion of what the Great American Outdoor Show is all about. In fact, I want to talk more about this by bringing in Christina Paladou, NRA Media Relations Manager, who is there, I believe, in Harrisburg. Christina, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am fantastic. And I'm a little jealous because I'm going to be coming up weekend two of the Great American Outdoor Show. So I'm not going to be there opening weekend, but I should mention this show runs 9 days. So if you can't make it this weekend, you've got all next week. You've got next weekend as well. I'll be there next weekend. We can meet up at the milkshake stand in the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex. We can have a little Cam and Company get together. But I mean, you've got NRA Country Concerts. You've got a huge NRA Foundation event. I'm wearing my Nine Line hat today because I know that they're involved in the NRA Foundation event. What all can people expect when they show up in Harrisburg this weekend or over the course of the next 9 days?
Well, as you were saying, it takes up the entire complex. It's 650,000 square feet of 1,100 exhibitors and a million outdoor products. So if you can think of something that's going to be in the outdoors or that you want to use in the outdoors or do in the outdoors, it's at this show. It's the world's largest consumer outdoor show. So one day is not enough, and you could not even cover it all in 9 days. So make sure you plan enough time to be there because there's events and seminars and celebrity appearances and family-friendly activities going on all 9 days of the show.
Absolutely. That is really good advice. By the way, that is not hyperbole. I can tell you from years of experience, at a minimum, 2 days. Spend 1 day and do the seminars, or maybe take a morning to do the seminars and do some walking around in the afternoon, and then maybe swip-flop the next day. But, I mean, yeah, I'm not even going to be able to rattle these all off, but you've got the shooting sports hall, you've got the archery hall, you've got the outfitters hall, you've got the fishing hall, you got the outdoors hall. I mean, it's amazing, the right breadth and the scope of this show. It's absolutely incredible. And again, you're going to get people from not just Pennsylvania and Maryland, but people driving in from Ohio, from New York State, from Virginia and points beyond. Mm-hmm. I mean, even internationally, because some of the outfitters that people can actually get a chance to talk to, they're from all over the globe.
Yeah, absolutely. And last year, we actually had people from 47 states come to the show. So it's not just a regional show anymore. It's a national and international show, like you were saying. And we're pulling in celebrities and experts from the outdoors that, you know, people from all over the country want to come see, whether it's from fishing, turkey hunting, deer hunting, how to cook wild game, how teaching your kids how to shoot a bow, teaching your kids how to cast a fishing rod. It's all there.
Well, again, you get more information at greatamericanoutdoorshow.org. But the show again kicks off this weekend. Christina, have fun, and hopefully I'll get a chance to see you in Harrisburg next weekend.
Definitely. Thank you for having me.
All right, Chris. Thank you, Christina Palladio, joining us, NRA Media Relations Manager here on Cam and Company. All right, so next week up in Harrisburg, we're going to have some fun times at the Great American Outdoor Show. Anti-gun activists, they don't get to have shows. You notice that? They don't get to have annual meetings because who's going to, acres and acres of the guns we want to ban, who's going to show for that, right? So instead, they have hearings. And we are going to get the first anti-gun hearing that we have had in 8 years in the House next Wednesday. Aren't you excited? Feel the excitement. Yes. Mike Thompson, congressman from California, making the announcement on Twitter, saying, stay tuned next Wednesday, February 6th at 10 a.m., because the House is, quote, finally taking action to prevent gun violence. Now, I don't know exactly what bills are going to be brought up on Wednesday, but I'm going to make a prediction, and I'm not Nostradamus, but I feel like I'm going out on a pretty sturdy limb here, that next Wednesday or perhaps if it's next Thursday, if the hearing runs long enough, and that's when we have a chance to talk about it, I have a feeling we're going to be able to talk about and point to specific reasons why the proposals that Mike Thompson and his colleagues are bringing up are not actually, quote unquote, common sense measures to prevent gun violence. But get your calendar ready, because next Wednesday, that is when the anti-gun activists and the anti-gun politicians in Congress really kick off their plans for your rights and my rights. This is a campaign, by the way, that's going to continue all through 2019. And through the 2020 presidential and congressional campaigns as well. So get ready, because it's not that it's coming. It's here right now. All right, let's get to today's Hero of the Day, our deal of the day. Good guy as well. Hero of the Day from Miami, Florida, where a food truck driver, according to NBC6, shot two people during an armed robbery on Tuesday morning. So about 10 o'clock in the morning when an armed suspect approached the truck in the area of Northwest 35th Avenue and Northwest 65th Street, pointed a gun at a woman inside the truck, demanded she hand over money and then get on the ground. The driver of the truck heard what was going on. He came around. He saw the suspect, who pointed the gun at the driver. The driver was handing money over to the suspect when he was somehow able to arm himself and shoot the suspect, according to police. Injured suspect tried to flee the scene, but was then tackled by a Good Samaritan who held him down until police arrived. There were two other individuals who apparently accomplices of this first armed robber, because they started shooting at the driver of the food truck, who fired back, hitting one of them. Then the car took off, drove to a local hospital. One of the suspects was being treated. The other was being questioned. So our hero of the day, obviously, the driver of this food truck. Here's what bugs me about this story. I'm going to give you a quote by Miami-Dade Police Detective Angel Rodriguez, who says, quote, "We're very fortunate that this incident was not any more tragic than what it turned out to be. This is not something that we condone, and we don't ask anybody in the community to do this. Please do not confront any individual that is armed. Please do not confront any individual that is armed." Here's my problem with that. I'm not able to put my faith and my trust in the person who's pointing a gun at me and demanding my money or my life. Maybe that's a character flaw of me, but I can't do that. And I think there are good reasons not to. I want to give you another story from Miami. This was January 14th of this year, a couple weeks ago. Robbers shot a man in the head to steal his wallet. Cops want help in finding them. Yeah. Three armed robbers jumped a 53-year-old in North Miami-Dade on a Sunday morning, stole his wallet, and then shot the man in the head when he tried to follow them and try to confront him. Maybe just wanted a description. Maybe he was just trying to get his wallet back. But that was enough for these individuals to turn around and murder this man in cold blood. Again, I can't put my faith and my trust in the person who's demanding my money or my possessions or my car or perhaps my family or my life. I choose to protect myself just as I choose to protect the ones that I love. And I have to say, I think that is really, really bad advice, perhaps fatal advice. Well-intentioned, don't get me wrong, well-intentioned, but still bad advice, at least for those of us who believe in self-defense. Our deal of the day today, from Local 12 in Batavia, Ohio. Ohio, one of the hardest hit states when it comes to the opioid epidemic, as this next story indicates. It was Monday night. There was a crash in Batavia Township. A off-duty Clear Creek Township police officer was killed when the car that he was riding in was struck
by one driven by Justin Watts. The 31-year-old Watts has now been charged with aggravated vehicular homicide. Crossed over the center line, crashed into 27-year-old Jared Lee, who was pronounced dead at the scene. Ohio State Patrol says drug impairment was a contributing factor. The prosecution, upon his first appearance, asked for a high bond in a Clermont County courtroom on Tuesday. Assistant prosecutor cited a, quote, lengthy criminal history. Said this guy's actually on probation right now for a felonious assault in Warren County. Prosecution said that Watts overdosed last year and was charged with possessing fentanyl. Also has a past drug trafficking conviction. Despite all of that, apparently the state deemed him okay to be out on the street, because he was. Assistant prosecutor said Watts posed a significant risk to the citizens of Clermont County. Watts arrested again, charged with aggravated vehicular homicide, and vehicular manslaughter. As of the victim in this case, Derek Lee, according to the chief Air Force veteran, who served in Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, hired as a part-time officer in 2017, promoted to a full-time officer a year ago. He leaves behind a wife and young children. Let's move on to our hero of the day, shall we? I think that Officer Lee, by the way, makes a really good candidate for our hero of the day. I got another story for you. A lot of us, I'm not complaining about the weather right now because it's almost above freezing. I know many of you are dealing with temperatures well below zero. In fact, in a lot of cities, the Postal Service actually canceled delivery yesterday because it was so flipping cold. But in Lake Odessa, Michigan, WILX reported that an Ionia County pharmacy ended up making deliveries via snowmobile. Yeah. The Lake Odessa pharmacy usually delivers prescriptions for free. They have a lot of elderly clients who can't get out of their house easily. So as a service to their clients, they drive around. Couldn't drive. Wayne and Margaret Masbach couldn't get their car out Wednesday. Wayne was about to run out of his daily prescription. And when pharmacist Andrea Cusack called to remind the couple about the refill, she said, I can deliver it. And I said, is your driveway plowed? They said, no. I said, okay, so I'm going to have to bring the snowmobile. They said, we would recommend that. And so that's exactly what she did. How about that? That is some true customer service. And I got to tell you, that is some of the best of small town America, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Andrea Cusack, there of the Lake Odessa Pharmacy in Lake Odessa, Michigan. Thank you for being one of the many, many good guys out there. All right, so we have just a couple of seconds left, but I want to give you a headline from The Atlantic that I ran across earlier today. Michael Bloomberg's secret plans to take down Trump. Whether or not he runs for president, the former New York City mayor is building the most powerful political organization in America. We've talked about this on the program before. Michael Bloomberg is weighing a presidential run, but either way, he's got to spend a lot of money. And his big issues right now are climate change and your right to keep and bear arms. And that's exactly what this Atlantic piece points out, that he has, quote, bigger plans for 2020 than running for president. While no final decision has been made, his aides have been working on a fallback that only a man worth $40 billion can afford. Bloomberg pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into a data-centric political operation designed to ensure one goal, crush the pro-Second Amendment President Donald Trump. We're going to talk more about that on tomorrow's Cam and Company. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Have a great rest of your Thursday. We'll see you here soon.